Digital Dave.
Fast Eddie, and I'm definitely off today.
We're off today.
We are off. Tuesday.
We'll have it by Sunday.
Tuesday has just come apart on us. I'm sorry.
Okay, and on to business. We're right. joined by Chris Porter and Peter Strzok of NASA. Right. More NASA.
More NASA.
Say it with me.
From NASA. From the Glenn Research Center. You guys are playing, you're doing icing studies.
Now, before, you know, isn't everything known about icing by now? That would be my question. Obviously yep. not.
Yep. Icing is still an issue today.
It's still there. Mm-hmm. It's still out there.
Yep. The weather hasn't changed.
And it's still not friends.
No, it isn't. I have seen it up close and personal. Ice is not your friend in an airplane, definitely.
Okay. What kind of icing are you guys researching?
So there's two distinct portions of icing. One of them is supercooled water, where supercooled means the water is below freezing but still in the liquid phase. And that water can impact wings, noses, fuselages, vertical tails, and it'll accrete on the leading edges and cause increases in drag and decreases in lift. The second one is the ice crystal icing, which is new and starting to impact engines, which my colleague Peter Strzok knows more about.
Now, is it's just that you're now recognizing that this happens? I mean, icing in physics hasn't changed much in several zillion years. Well, or maybe it's the engine designs that are more prone to it?
Well, I think the ice crystal icing, which is, as you mentioned, has been only recently recognized to happen, and my understanding, it affects engines a little bit differently. And really the phenomena is that as aircraft are flying at high altitudes, there's portions of the clouds that can have high concentrations of ice crystals. Those come in and actually get into the core of the engine, can partially melt and then refreeze deeper in the engine, and occasionally can shed, causing damage to blades or possibly blockage, disruption to airflow, leading to things like rollback, surge, or flame out.
Well, that gets awfully exciting. So I guess the NTSB has actually seen engines and wondered what happened to them. Like, why is this thing showing impact damage when it was at 41,000 feet? There's nothing up there. Is that part of how this got started?
The industry, a lot of the airframe manufacturers did research and were recognizing that they, you know, had some engine events, and then as they were researching it, they recognized that this was happening kind of in common areas, concentrations of ice crystals, which is often around thunderstorms. You're kind of going around convective areas, and that's, you get a lot of moisture from the surface, like over the warm oceans, and it brings up a lot of moisture. It becomes ice crystals, and so they recognized the pattern, and then that kind of started going down this path to understand what's going on. And then NASA got involved, and we started doing research probably a little over 10 years ago now in this area. We have a couple of facilities at NASA Glenn 1 that can actually do ice crystal icing research.
So you can create your own icing.
That's correct.
Which is not easy.
It's not. In fact, we're going to talk about it more. We have a forum session today, this afternoon, and we're going to talk both about airframe and engine icing at that session's at 2:30 and I think forum 4.
Okay. Now, as far as airframe icing goes, icing, de-icing systems have been around a long time. Would you consider them as good as they can be?
You could always get better. I mean, in the opinion of engine manufacturers and airframers, they want the aircraft to be as efficient as possible, which means they want to pull off the least amount of heat or energy from the engine for their anti-icing system. So using like intermittent icing, heating up the wing for a portion of time to melt off the ice shape, letting it build up a little bit more, and then doing a strategy like that to reduce the reduction of efficiency is the goal. Ideally, you would want to just spray a magical coating where the ice won't grow, but we don't have that yet. So we have to stick to more conventional methods like heated anti-icing systems or inflatable boots that'll shed the ice off the wings.
Now, have you guys messed around with it? There's a bunch of super hydrophobic coating stuff out there. I mean, have you ever tried that just to see what happens?
We do. At NASA Glenn, we're interested in understanding the metrics that you would use to quantify how good an anti-icing coating is. So we're looking at things like adhesion strength of materials and, more importantly, durability. I mean, you could have a very good material, but if it doesn't last for a full flight, what use is it? So right. A lot of times the perspective is let's build a durable material first and then try to get it to be more hydrophobic. So like things like polymers are being looked at and, rather than just sprays.
Right. So that would be a permanent coating.
Yeah, correct.
So
I'm assuming that when you're testing an icing, that you're either up in the sky with an airplane, but more than likely you're in a wind tunnel specifically mm-hmm. set up for that?
Yeah, that's correct. We have both flight resources and wind tunnels at NASA. We have a Twin Otter aircraft, which many pilots may be familiar with some of our pilot educational material on flying into icing, but we've also used other aircraft. We work with the DC-8 aircraft. In fact, we've been flying that around recently, around convective areas to look at radar systems to help pilots avoid the ice, high concentrations of ice crystals.
Now, these concentrations of ice crystals, do they tend to be visible or invisible?
Well, it's interesting you ask that. That you're clearly in instrument meteorological conditions when you're flying, but the radars today typically are tuned or designed to tune out the ice crystals, so they're more designed to look for the water that you would be associated with heavy convection. So you're not really painting too much on the radar when you're in these conditions.
So you think you're fine, and the next thing you know, your engines are icing up, and you don't even know.
That's correct.
Until something bad happens.
Right.
Well, that's not good.
Nope.
So what you guys are doing is, if say a pilot is buzzing along and he's in the clouds, you want to have a radar system on the aircraft that will say, hey, you got ice ahead, you should turn.
Or it has to have a mode where it can switch into to look for that, as opposed to the other type events that normally looks for.
Not only that, but when it comes to engine, well, the difference between engine and airframe is you could look out your window and see ice growing on a wing. But in an engine, we don't really have the instrumentation yet to identify when we're actually icing up. And each engine is different. So when you fly through a cloud for airframe icing, each aircraft is going to ice up similarly in similar clouds. But when it comes to engine icing, there's different pressure rises, different temperature rises in the compressor region. So there's not that similarity between engine, and each engine is different. And what we were really interested in understanding is identifying when the engine is actually icing so we could take action to correct. Right now, we just infer it through performance parameters. It's very difficult to get a camera in there or sensor in there that'll say we're icing.
Yeah, I'm not even sure what kind of sensor you would want to put in there.
I was going to say, this is not a generic solution. This is going to have to be engine-specific.
Correct.
It is. In fact, well, we have a video actually we're showing at our booth, and we'll show at our presentation this afternoon. It was the first time we've ever documented in a jet engine what the ice accretion looks like in the compressor region. It actually is occurring between the low-pressure and high-pressure compressor, and we were able to instrument an engine a few years ago and actually video that event.
So you put a port in the side of the chamber.
It's actually that, you know, down in the core through a little window that we were able to install and image it through that window.
Wow. I'm sure that was quite surprising.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are you planning to work with engine manufacturers to recommend how to stop this or lessen it? Or
We don't recommend. We just provide the data, and the engine manufacturers decide how they want to tackle the challenge. The FAA recently released Appendix D, which regulates engine icing, and the engine manufacturers are now understanding how to comply with that and make the aircraft safe for all of us flying.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Me too. It's bad enough they lose their luggage. Let's not lose anything else.
Yeah.
You know, I have to admit, I've never heard of a jet engine icing up.
Yeah, that's...
Is this common with the large bypass engines, or can this happen with any jet engine?
It's more common with the higher bypass engines. There are stories in the media you can find if you just like search on engine icing, ice crystals. You'll find there have been events where engines have lost power. But fortunately, this event most often the engines are able to get restarted once you get to a lower altitude and out of the clouds. So it really hasn't led to any kind of accidents or anything like that.
But you've actually seen physical damage caused by the icing, though, when they tear the engine down.
That's correct.
Wow.
That's amazing.
I mean, the first guy that suggested that engine icing must have caused this problem, they must have looked at him like he had three heads.
Something like that.
Well, yeah.
You know, I always figured that with the compressor section being, you take cold air in, you get compressed hot air out of it, mm-hmm. you figure that you wouldn't see anything like that. You just think it's not possible. But once again, I'm wrong.
Yeah, there's a thin region, so you're breathing in very cold air, and it has to cross that the melting point at some point. And that thin region, very specific conditions, is what leads to this engine icing.
Right. So it's a specific area in the engine where this happens.
A specific temperature condition, which can move based on what the temperature is outside, the compression and temperature ratios of each stage. So it can move up and down in the engine depending on the operating condition.
And the other thing you said was it tends to stagnate in the engine.
That's correct. You get a little bit of water. You have to melt the ice crystals just a little bit. It becomes very sticky, and then it gets centrifuged out to the walls inside the engine and can actually start accreting. And so there's this little stagnation points like your inlet guide vanes, those sorts of things, or anything that you have in the flow path.
Okay, you guys are up in the NASA pavilion?
That's correct.
All right. Mm-hmm. I want to thank you guys for joining us. We've been talking with Chris Porter and Peter Strzok of NASA Glenn Research Center. I'm Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie.
And this is EAA Radio.